Hi, this is Mike Miller, and you're on the Harmony Street Show. And I am thrilled to have one of my heroes, Mr. Jimmy Beaumont of the Skyliners. How you doing, Jimmy?
Hi, Mike. I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great. I understand that they're working on the Since I Don't Have You movie, and I know that's in the forefront of everybody's minds right now. It's a special tribute, actually, to Janet Vogel. I think it's a wonderful thing. How's that coming along?
Well, from what I know, they're wrapping it up pretty soon, I think. Maybe within the next month or so. I don't know when it's going to be released, but I think it's close to being finished.
Wow, that's a wonderful thing. I mean, you know, there are an awful lot of movies about the genre, but I think this one's really going to hit home because, of course, I don't have to tell you how much the Skyliners are loved by people who love the music. And, you know, she actually holds a special place for having set actually the bar for female sopranos singing love songs in the 50s.
Oh, boy, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, she's one of a kind, for sure.
You know, and Donna had very big shoes to fill when she came into the group. And, you know, of course, I've worked with the group a couple of times. Years ago with Harmony Street when I had the group with three girls. And then again when I was singing with George Galfo's Mystics. Donna does a pretty good job, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah, Donna's excellent. For sure. She's got the perfect pitch, which is, you know, that's God-given. I mean, you can't learn that. It's just... sing me a C, Donna, and she sings it for you.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, I worked with a couple of girls. One of them had perfect pitch. And, you know, as Nick was telling me yesterday, my girl, Ellen, used to beat me up on stage. You know, I'd get a punch in the arm, or she'd lift her chin up telling me, you know, get up over the note. Because when they hear the note, unless it's in the bullseye, it irritates them.
Yeah, you know, yeah, it does.
You know, I know what you're saying. And, you know, it's funny. I just drove one of our daughters back home, and she had to go to work because she lives in Palm Beach. And she lives on Beaumont Avenue in Palm Beach, in Palm Beach County.
Oh, that's good.
And I didn't even realize it. You know, she says, you live on Beaumont Avenue. I have to take a picture and send it to you.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, very cool. Let's talk a little bit about the Skyliners. Of course, Skyliners always had the perfect blend. And we know that way back there were the Crescents and the Monterey's and the El Rio's. And, you know, how did that all come about? I know that early on we all sang with different groups. And, you know, every time we looked up, we were changing members and we were looking for new people. But basically, how did the Skyliners come about, in your own words?
Well, I was singing with the Monterey's, and I was the bass singer in the Monterey's, and we switched off on leads, but I was primarily the bass there, and at that time they would have, DJs would put on battles, you know, between the groups and stuff like that, and
right.
I'd have four or five groups show up singing a cappella, and the Crescents were one of the groups that was on a particular show that we did. Al Noble was a DJ in Pittsburgh. And,
right.
The Crescents were one of the groups that were, on the show. And I think I did Sympathy, maybe, by the Cadillacs.
Right.
I did a lead that night.
Right.
And Joe Rock was there, and he was the manager of the Crescents.
Right.
And he asked me to join the Crescents that night, so... I became the lead singer of the Crescents, and we performed at record hops and stuff like that for a couple of years. I was probably about 15 when I joined the Crescents, and
wow.
Then got a record contract with ABC Paramount, and
right.
It was like a year went by, and we still weren't recorded, and, you know, some of the guys were getting antsy, and so three of the members quit, and when they left, I knew Joe Bersharin from the El Rios, and
right.
Janet Vogel, she was singing with the El Rios in the high school that I attended, Carrick High School.
Right.
And as I said, three of the Crescents dropped out, the bass singer and one of the lead singers and the baritone. So Jack Taylor, who was became the bass singer with the Skyliners, he was our guitar player with the Crescents.
Right.
I knew he was a good bass singer, so he joined the, we're still called the Crescents because the group broke up.
I gotcha.
And, yeah, so, put down the guitar and he became the bass singer, and Joe Brashear was a baritone, so he fit right in there. And then, of course, we put Janet on top of the vocals, and
right.
Wally Lester was the top tenor in the Crescents, but he was able to move to second tenor because, put Janet up on the top.
Yeah, girls really take the heat off, don't they?
Yeah, well, for sure. Then we could raise the background harmony.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. But it keeps you. But it also keeps you honest, because when you got a girl on top, you know, it's like everything comes up a notch. And as a lead singer, you really got to you have to show up, you know.
Yeah.
And I have to say this personally, that for a bass singer, you really had a hell of a career for a bass singer.
Yeah, well, it was pretty short-lived, but
I know.
I do a couple of basses on. I'm singing bass on. I Can Dream, Can I? One of Janet's leads. And I did bass on our song Believe Me.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how that came about. Jackie couldn't make it that day or something.
Uh-huh.
Believe me,
and if I told you.
couple things involving the bass.
What's funny is, you know, I said to Nick, you know, I said, I'm pretty much of a vocal arranger, and, you know, I said to him, as you know, I've covered just about every Skyliners tune that there is. Harmony Street did Since. We did This I Swear. We did Pennies. You know, as a matter of fact, our version of Lonely Way is on a bunch of compilations. It's on Collectibles. It's on Starlight. It's on, you know, and with George Galfo's Mystics, we did a version of It Happened Today. And the one thing I want to say that vocally is this, that I noticed that arrangement-wise, the Skyliners never had the bass sticking way out as a lot of groups did with A Life of Its Own. They always had the bass blended into the mix, which we did the same thing. I love that because it makes the harmony sound so full and so even. Your harmony, as sweet as it was very spread out and always sweet and so beautifully arranged.
Yeah, well, thank you. We were blessed in, you know, in that the blend that we put together, and it was everyone fit right into their slot, you know. So it was a terrific blend for sure. I'd listened to so many records groups, you know, from the time I was probably around 12 years old.
Right.
You know, right up until the time the Skyliners formed. And so I used to like to break the harmonies down and,
yeah,
pick the parts out. And so I became pretty good at that, you know, putting the harmonies together. So I basically did most of the vocal arrangements.
Which is great.
Well, I did all of them.
which is great. I mean, you know, because a lot of times you get guys in the group and they'll say, you know, it's like, this is the way we did it. This is the way we did it on the corner. And I'm sitting there with the guitar. I'm saying, the note is not in the chord, man. It's like, it's discord. And yeah, but that's the way we did it. But that's not the way we're going to do it now.
Yeah, sure. Well, I listen to, of course, the doo-wop groups, you know, the R&B groups.
Right.
Of that time, and but I also like the jazz groups, the Four Freshmen and Hellos, and, you know, groups like that. So
your ear kind of just gravitated to that. You know, me too. My mother gave me a little transistor radio to keep me happy, you know, when I was a kid, keep me quiet. She fed me and she gave me a transistor, you know.
There you go. So, that's what we need, right?
Exactly, you know. And so my ears found all of the R&B, you know, the Jaco stuff and the, you know, the Cadillacs and the Chords and, you know, Leandras and the Hearts, and I gravitated to that, you know. So when I grew up, I had all the lyrics and the chord changes to all those tunes in my head, and I don't know how they got there. You know, it's just
you sucked them up. That's a young energy,
right?
We had.
Exactly. you just absorb it.
Yeah,
you know,
you absorb it for sure.
You know, and you know,
it was a great time. It was a fun time.
And also, if you take a song like Since I Don't Have You, which, of course, everyone has to give you and Joe credit for using the violin so tastefully on all of those tunes, because it was the first time that full orchestra had ever been done. And even the way they changed the form of the violins in the bridges, just to pluck the violins staccato and then go back to full bow. And, you know, that's a little bit of genius. And I think that's what makes it fly. And then again, you know, I've sung Since I Don't Have You. And by the time you get the 11th U out, because they're all open, you can really run out of gas.
I know that feeling.
I don't
And it's, you know, it's just a wonderful thing. Of course, when you write your own tunes and you have the pleasure of not only hearing your own voice coming back, but also hearing stuff that you've written, you're much more emotionally attached to it, to a tune when you've written the lyrics or you've written the chord changes. I mean, I think that has a lot to do with it, too.
Oh, yeah. I'm proud of that stuff that I was able to do that. And then I learned guitar also,
right,
chord structure and stuff like that, because up until the time Joe and I wrote Since I Don't Have You,
right,
I didn't play an instrument, but I was interested in, as I said, Jack Taylor, our bass singer, was a guitarist with the Crescents, and he showed me a little bit of stuff, and then I went and, you know, bought my own guitar, and I was kind of self-taught, learned from books and stuff like that.
Right.
Jackie helped me, but I just learned enough to be able to, you know, put the songs together and use the proper chord structures and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Well,
performed Since I Don't Have You at the audition for Calico Records. They were auditioning groups and, you know, singers, and they were getting ready to start the company up, and when we did Since I Don't Have You, Lenny Martin was the A&R and the arranger.
Right.
He wrote all the charts and everything for the records.
Uh-huh.
But, when we finished Since I Don't Have You, he stood up and he said, well, he applauded. He said, oh, that's our group. We're going to take that group, right?
Wow, wow. I have a silly question to ask you. When you first started the group, because I know how it was when I, you know, I had so many groups growing up and whatever, but when I got older, actually, I had stopped singing. My brother passed away, and usually the only thing that heals you is the music, because that's always there for you. And I went back to singing, and I started this group, and I found the three girls and everything. When we started off, we were pretty good, but we weren't tight on that level where we were actually thinking and breathing and whatever together. And we just locked ourselves into a room and rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed until we started thinking alike. Almost. You know, I can imagine when you first started the Skyliners, everybody thinks, you know, oh my goodness, this group is just sent from heaven. I'm sure that it wasn't tight right away. I'm sure that it took a lot of work and a lot of soul searching and a lot of singing together in order to say, okay, now we're on this level. Let's bring it forward.
Yeah, well, we rehearsed every night because it was fun for us also. And,
right.
And as you say, you get tighter as it goes along. And then even through our recording careers,
right,
Skyliners, they kept tighter and tighter, you know, and
right,
improving on our sound.
Right. One of the things that I've noticed, too, is that, you know, when you go from town to town and you have your charts, you get to sound check, the musicians pretty much are supposed to get your charts a few weeks before and whatever, and then you realize that they haven't opened up the envelope until sound check.
Yeah.
And even doing covers of the Skyliner stuff, All of those tunes are heavily arranged. You can't sing Since I Don't Have You or This I Swear and come in, you know, on the first measure of the vocal unless the band or the orchestra really sets up that intro, because there's only one way to play it. And many, many times you'll find that the keyboard player or the guitar player at the beginning can't play those riffs. And it's tough. So if it was tough for me singing that song, it's got to be tough for you coming in and saying, okay, a very, very big part of what we do is the orchestral hook at the beginning before we even start singing. So that's got to be right on the money. It must be tough.
Well, most of the shows that we do, we don't have any problem with that. The musicians are very capable. But,
right.
Occasionally it happens, you know, but we carry our drummer. Mark. Married to Donna, Mark Rue.
Yeah, Mark is fabulous. I met him up, we did a show together, I think, for Harvey Robbins up in New England, and I met him that night, and I also met him at the Broward a couple of years ago. Super guy.
Yeah, and great drummer. And so, you know, we've been using the guitarist and bass player that have at the jobs.
Gotcha.
And usually they're very capable.
Right. Oh, you know, it's, you know, and also I think to myself, and I'm going to ask you this question. I'll ask Donna when I get to talk to her. Does Donna ever get towards the end of a particular song and say, uh-oh, I think I know what's coming? Does she ever, like, really have to stand on her tippy toes on some nights, or does she always nail that note?
No, she nails it all the time.
Isn't that something? Because, I mean, you know.
Hits it every time, yeah.
That's good when you have that kind of talent and that kind of confidence. When you go out there, isn't it amazing how the aficionados, they want to hear the falsetto trill, and Since I Don't Have You, they want to hear it just the way they heard it when they were 13, and they want to hear that note at the end just the way they heard it when they were 13 years old.
Totally, yeah. They don't want you to improvise on your records. They want it as closely as you can, you know, do it.
Yeah.
And I try to stick to that. I don't want to mess with anything.
Oh, yeah. Plus, doing any of your arrangements really separate the men from the boys, because not too many groups can tackle those tunes and pull them off and get them right. I've heard very few groups do the bridges correctly, because there's a lot of sliding around on the bridges, you know, in the harmony. It's not straight ahead harmony.
When we recorded Since I Don't Have You and it was released.
Right.
Right away, Trini Lopez covered it.
Right.
And he had already had success, you know, had some charted records.
Right.
And I thought, oh, boy, here we go. You know, now he's going to cover us, and we're not going to have the hit. He's going to have it.
Uh-huh.
But we were lucky, and, you know, we ended up selling the million with it.
Absolutely.
But when we did This, I Swear, you know, when we wrote that song, I was determined that I was going to make it as hard as I could. You know, so we wouldn't be covered again. That's what happens in the bridge of This, I Swear.
Yeah, I know. It's
harmony,
it's probably locked up in a safe somewhere, the arrangement, you know. It's like,
yeah. To copy that, it was, you know, it was pretty tough, so.
Yeah, no.
Don't worry about that again.
Love will be eternally.
you know, you were lucky because right away, you know, right to the Dick Clark Show, you know, did the Apollo, which was great, you know, for a white group in those days to be doing the Apollo. And, you know, what's interesting to me is that, you know, you were very big on the R&B charts, you know. And, you know, that's a great thing, too. I was a dean in a junior high school in the Bronx, and Jimmy Keys was, I had his kids in my school. He had them, two of them later on in life, and he used to come to career day. And it was funny how he used to tell the story about how some groups just died on the R&B charts, and the white groups would cover it and have the hits on the pop charts. But the Skyliners managed to climb to the top of both charts, which is great.
Actually, Since I Don't Have You was, it actually hit number one on the R&B charts before it even got into, like, the top 50 in pop.
Wow, that's amazing.
One of the earliest performances we did was at the Apollo Theater.
Yeah. Tell me about Joe Rock, in your own words, because I think a lot of people see his name all over the music, but a lot of people who are listening don't really know much about Joe Rock as the man.
Well, Joe was very talented, and he got his start in music as a record promotion man, and some of the listeners might not know what that was, but
right.
At that time they would send a promotion man out to the radio stations and, you know, to preview the latest discs,
right.
You know, at the station, and I don't think they do that much anymore, but that was a pretty big part of the music business. And,
oh, yeah, the whole business has changed, you know.
Yeah, pretty much so. So he learned a lot about the business that way. And as I said, he was a very talented lyricist. And Joe was one of the people that they hired to write Hallmark cards and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
You know, so he made a lot of money with that.
Right.
And he didn't write music, and I didn't write lyrics, so... You know, it was a pretty good combination.
Right.
He'd write the lyrics and give me those lyrics, and then I'd put the melody to it and do the arrangement. But Joe was a funny guy, too. He could have been a comedian if he wanted to, you know. And, yeah, a lot of energy. You know, he was always up, very honest. Never took any money from us, you know, like a lot of managers did.
Yeah, well, you know, Nick said he always told you what was on his mind. You didn't have to read his mind. You could see very clearly what was on his mind.
Yeah, he'd tell you what he thought, that's for sure. No, I miss him a lot. He was a fun guy.
Yep.
And as I said, very talented. His lyrics would, you know, they just kind of jump at you, jump off that page at you, you know what I mean? So they were very easy to write to.
You also had a little bit of a solo career where you came out with some really good stuff. It's been said, now I have a tune that I did with a group years and years ago, and we forgot about that record, and then somebody called me up, actually emailed me from England and said the tune's worth $200 and it's a Northern Soul hit. You know, they're selling it in England. And I thought to myself, well, some of the Jimmy Beaumont tunes, you know, the solo stuff have become Northern Soul type hits. So some of the Jimmy Beaumont tunes have become Northern Soul hits, actually, over in Europe. Are you aware of that?
Yes, I've been hearing a lot about that. We might be going to London. I don't know. The Farrah Brothers are thinking about taking a tour over there, so
that'd be great.
And,
oh, absolutely. You know.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot that they've been playing that stuff over there. Eddie Engel released that one. I don't know if you...
Oh, yeah, Crystal. Eddie's a good friend. Crystal
New
Ball.
Yorker, yeah, good guy.
Crystal Ball Records. Oh, absolutely. I have some stuff with him, and, you know, which is great. It's great to hear it back. Even though I didn't have the big hit, you know, I've had a couple of tunes that I've written come back to me. As a matter of fact, I'll send you a couple. I'm going to send you all the Skyliners covers that we've done, and you can actually critique them.
Oh, sounds great.
Yeah, you know, it's...
Let's break up a little bit, man, so...
Well, I'm sure you've heard it done... I'm sure you've heard it done every which way and sideways. I know the Zircons had a big hit with Lonely Way years ago. I don't even know if they're still around, but they were a Bronx group, and I was a Bronx kid. I remember them vividly.
That was an acapella group, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You know, it was all good. Let me ask you this. What are your favorite Skyliner tunes?
Well, since I don't have you in this, I swear, of course, but How Much is one of my favorites. I'm pretty proud of that one.
Just let me know, and I will show how much
I love you.
How much I love you.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, and of course it just goes on and on and on.
I'll be seeing you in all the old familiar places that this heart of mine embraces all day through.
All day.
Is upside down.
Baby, don't you know?
Trade them for a package of the sunshine and flowers. If you want the things you love, you must have showers. So when you hear it thunder, don't you run under the tree. There'll be pennies from heaven for you and me.
Every time it rains, it rains.
Pennies from heaven.
don't you know each cloud you tame then needs some help. You'll find your fortunes falling all over time. Make sure your umbrella,
make sure your umbrella's upside.
Baby, don't you know, trade them for a package of the sunshine and flowers. If you want the things you love, you must have showers. So when you hear it thunder, don't you run under a tree. There'll be pennies from heaven for you and me.
So take a big deep breath of the clean fresh air. Put a smile on your face, be a millionaire. The streets outside are favorite gold. There'll be pennies from heaven for you and for me.
I'll go my lonely way. Now that you're gone, I'll walk the lonely streets from dusk to dawn. If I can't walk along with you, then I'll go my lonely way. Should ask me, dear, what's my reply? That's why I'll go on loving you and go on my lonely way. I've had my chance for romance. Yo.
Play a CD, every cut has the magic. I mean, you know, it's just amazing where you have some groups that produce tunes, and, you know, out of 15 tunes, two or three of them are okay, and the rest of them are like throwaway tunes. But not with the Skyliners. You know, every note that is played and every note that is sung with purpose. And that...
Yeah, we wanted to, you know, we were going for double-sided hits, you know, why not?
And you did that. I mean, you know, it happened today, although, once again, not very many groups are singing it because it's a tough tune to sing. What a great tune, and what a different kind of a sound.
Shoot you up, 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 shoot you up.
I knew you up someday, you'd come my way.
Actually did an addition to doing Lonely Way for Starlight.
I'll go my lonely way. Now that you're gone, I'll walk lonely streets from dusk till dawn. For romance to give. I'll go my lonely way.
And it was the one of the few tunes that Bob Kretschmar produced on Starlight that had music, because both basically he did a cappella. But you know, That was a lot of fun to do that. There was a DJ in New Haven called Kenny Jordan, and we actually did a full 2.5 minute jingle for his radio program using Lonely Way, and we changed the words around, and that's pretty cool too. I gotta send you that too.
Yeah, that'd be great.
You'll get a kick out of that, you know. The strings and the string arrangements. Where did that come from? I mean, whose idea was that?
He gave us credit for, you know, being the first R&B group, and I think we probably were. We actually were an R&B group, you know, not so much pop.
Right.
But the Platters had been doing, you know, their songs with strings for some time, 1955.
Right.
So, you know, I admire that group so much, and Joe Verscheren, our baritone singer, we were in the same grade. You know, we graduated together in high school.
Right.
And so, you know, at lunchtime we'd be listening to, you know, that used to play music for us, and we'd hear the Platter songs, and we'd say, boy, when we make a record, you know, we're going to have strings on it. So
right.
That's why I asked Lenny Martin if he thought that you know, strings would be good for Since I Don't Have You. He said, oh, excellent. We're singing the song in F, the key of F.
Uh-huh.
And he said, can you go up one half step?
Yeah, that's right. It is an F sharp, isn't it, you?
Yeah,
I noticed.
Are more brilliant in that key. So.
Absolutely, because, you know, it's funny that you should say that, because I happen to know that the tune is in F sharp. And you're absolutely right. Well, who would know better than you? But I know that as well.
Yeah.
Interesting, interesting. And, of course, the Skyliners had so many firsts. They were the first teen group to place an album in the national top 40, and the first white group to do the Apollo, and, I mean, just on and on and on down the line. Of course, being from Pittsburgh, I also noticed, and I told Gavin this, I said, I looked down the cast members for the movie. I said, most of them are centered around Pittsburgh. So pretty much this movie has a real Pittsburgh flavor to it.
Yeah, well, I haven't really seen any of the production yet. I helped them with choreography and, you know, the stage stuff and some of the things we used to do on stage. But it should be an excellent movie and a great tribute to Janet.
Oh, yeah. You know,
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So who are, for the people that are listening, who are the members of the Skyliners at this moment? Because some people are not aware.
Well, Donna Groom is, she's our top tenor and lead singer.
Right.
Rick Morris is back with the group now. He's living in Las Vegas, and he's second tenor and lead.
Right.
We're all lead singers, so, you know, we take turns. Nick Pochak is our bass and baritone singer.
Right.
And he does a lot of leads, too.
Right.
Nick does some of the high stuff, you know, that they used to do in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, Nick's another bass singer with a 4-octave range.
Oh, what a yeah, that's for sure. Yep. So that's pretty much what's going on now. We're just having a ball.
Well, you know, what's funny, too, I always notice that unless you're working with the Flamingos, Jimmy Beaumont always wears the loudest jacket on stage.
Yeah, okay.
I love some of those jackets.
well, we have to. It's show business.
No, there's no business like show business, you know.
Like, hey, Anderson, it's been great talking to you. It's
been a pleasure talking to you, Jimmy. We'll be in touch, man. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. Okay. Mike, bye-bye.
Bye.
I knew you up someday. You'd come my way. It happened. It happened today.
John.
Hey, Nick. You know, well, the one thing I wanted to talk to Donna about that I thought would be very interesting is, you know, and, you know, we've been on stage a bunch of times. I actually worked with Jimmy years ago when I had Harmony Street. That I had three girls in that group, and we covered everything that Jimmy sang. I mean, as a matter of fact, we have a version of Lonely Way Out that's on collectibles, and that tune was also on Starlight 2000. It's one of the only tunes that Bob Kretschmar ever did with music, because he does mostly a cappella with Starlight, and it's very interesting. And it's a damn good cut. It's as good as the Zircons. I won't say it's as good as the Skyliners, but you know, we do that. And we did that just to pay homage. We also, when I was with George Galfo's Mystics, and, you know, we've worked together when I was with George's group many times on stage, I think at the Broward and the Carl Springs Center and once up in Boston. You know, we actually did It Happen Today on an album, you know, and what's amazing to me is not too many groups can cover the Skyliners because their vocals are so intricate and are so orchestral that a lot of groups come short. They fall short.
And I, personally, I think you're absolutely right. You know, with respect to Donna having perfect pitch, you know, a lot of times when she's not just has perfect pitch, but she's also a concert pianist.
Right.
At some point in time, I'm sure very shortly, you're going to be talking to her.
Right.
But, you know, she brings this rubber hammer to the rehearsals, and it usually finds the top of my head.
Look.
You know, it's like, you know, when she lands it on top of my head, she goes, wrong.
I sang next to a lady named Ellen Pacelli. I had the Ladies of Harmony Street, three girls. It's tough enough with one lady. We had three, and Dee used to say on stage, we have three times of the month in this group, and we take it all out on him, and they would point to me. But it's true. But other than that, you know, Ellen had perfect pitch also, and when I saw her looking at me, because she stood next to me on stage, and she would, like, lift her chin up, you know, on stage, uh-huh. and very subtly, in order to tell me, you're under your note, you know, because unless we were in the bullseye, harmony-wise, she thought it was flat. Everybody else in the room thought it was great, but when you have perfect pitch, it's annoying for them unless it's right in the bullseye, because they can hear it.
Absolutely right. It is annoying to them. It bothers the heck out of them.
Right, you know.
And Jimmy's kind of that way, too, and I have to be honest with you. I mean, he's if he doesn't have perfect pitch, he has something that's damn close, excuse my French.
Right, no, I hear you.
I mean, he lets us all know, you know, if there's something that's gone awry at some time.
See,
whether it be during the show or after the show, he'll say, hey, you got to watch this particular part because you were flat.
Hey, I'll tell you, I've written a bunch of good tunes, and I hear some of them back once in a while. None of them were big hits, but you know, I still hear them on compilations and whatever. You know, Jimmy's writing ability, as well as his vocal ability and, you know, where he's taken this, when you think to yourself that he's singing Since I Don't Have You and This I Swear Is True and It Happened Today, and, you know, then you scratch your head and you say, and he wrote them, you know. And, you know, I mean, that's just the whole package. Writing with somebody like Joe Rock, there should be a book about Joe Rock because talented guy he was.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, he had his own hidden talent that really nobody ever saw, and I mean, he had a tongue. It was he had a tongue that could cut you in half.
Really,
whether you know whether it was intentional or not intentional, you know, it virtually put you in your place.
Yeah, but you need one of those in the room.
he knew what was going on, and he felt this is the way it should be. And if you didn't like it, find someplace else to go.
Now, you know, Nick, you're really a bass baritone, but you have like but you have like a 4-octave range. I mean, you know, what's with you guys?
Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. Here's where that kind of came about. When I was very young, and I kind of talked to Jimmy about this one day on the way to a job. When we were young. Listening to the radio and listening to female vocalists and so forth, and, you know, if you came across the song, you sang that song, and it didn't matter how high it was.
That's right.
And basically, we didn't know any better that we weren't supposed to go that high. So I think what happened was we both of us stretched our vocal cords to the point where we could hit those notes.
So you opened up, you got those chops. I mean, you know, I'm a tenor, and in my old age, you know, my high notes are falling off one by one. So, and I don't do those vocalises the way, I mean, obviously, when you're working, in the old days, when you're working 5 nights a week, I mean, you know, you're always warmed up. But, you know, like me, I'm not singing out that much, and I do a show once in a while when I'm asked. You know, it's like, it takes me an hour, it takes me 3 days to warm up. You know,
3 days.
Right. So you know how that is.
Don't feel like the lone stranger, Mike.
Hey, look,
you've never done that.
We actually have another thing in common, and that is that you learned to play guitar at an early age, like I did. So you had a point of you had a point of reference for your vocals. You know, because the guys that don't, I mean, I can't tell you. I was the vocal arranger for almost every group that I had. And, you know, and I would show them the chord, and I would say, here it is, man. We're just going to take the triad, and we're going to strip it down. And if we have to put the other thing down and you know, do an octave of the baritone, here's your note. And a lot of times they'd be singing, and I'd say, you know, the note you're singing is not in the chord. Yeah, man, but that's the way we sang on the corner. Yeah, but it's not in the chord. It's this chord. Get off it. You know. So
you know where a lot of that doo-wop stuff started out many, many, many moons ago, probably in the 30s,
right.
I'm going to guess, when the union people struck.
Right.
And, you know, they didn't have the musicians behind them. So the artists went in there and they basically tried to, emulate, the bass. And that's where the vocal bass comes in. Doing the so you've got the tenor, you've got the soprano, and you've got the bass, and you've got the lead. So that's where a lot of that doo-wop stuff started.
Yeah.
Many moons.
Oh, I can imagine.
It wasn't just in the gospel end of it.
You know what's really funny is I spoke to Jimmy 25 years ago, 30 years ago. He said to me one night, you know, he says, when we got together at the beginning, he says, we weren't the Skyliners. We weren't as tight as people know that we are. We had to work really hard, man, to get as tight as we were. And as it evolved and evolved, you know, and, you know, all of a sudden string arrangements and widespread harmony. I'll tell you something, you see, because my ears are different than most people's ears. And I did with Harmony Street what the Skyliners did on their recordings was at that time, most of the records that you heard that were considered to be doo-wop or love songs or anything else, the bass was extremely prominent and had a life of its own and was on a separate mic. The Skyliners always blended the bass into the harmony and didn't let it live on its own. It was in the mix, what I call in the mix. And it was a totally different sound. It made the sound much, much fuller, much warmer. Instead of having that bass sticking way out front, you know, as loud and as out front as the lead with the triad in the back. It was one full sound, you know? And I noticed that right away, even years ago when I was listening to Skyliner Records, if you take the bass away, you miss it completely. But, you know, when you're hearing the fullness of the tune, it's not like the bass is sticking way out there like it is in a lot of other tunes. That's the way I hear it.
Yeah, it blends.
It's in the mix. I think that's where it should be. The other thing that I noticed musically, you know, and I can have this conversation with you because you know, is that when it comes to doing the bridges on both This I Swear Is True and Since I Don't Have You, there are very few groups that understand even for a minute what's going on there, because you have people kind of sliding through the harmony there, and it's not straight harmony. And, you know, most groups sing it straight ahead, but it really isn't constructed straight ahead.
Yes, that's very true. It's really, the lead almost takes a back seat to the back line.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just interesting things, as I'm always interested in, you know, how harmony is constructed. I had a talk a few weeks ago with Earl Carroll, you know, Speedo, and we were talking about certain songs that they did, and I said, you know, a lot of times the harmony was in the bridge of a tune was, for instance, in Zoom, in the bridge in Zoom, he is floating all over the bridge in a falsetto outside of the harmony, and everybody sings it straight ahead. When I noticed it with Harmony Street, and we had one of the girls like hitting those notes, and he said to me, "Damn," he said, "you picked up on that?" I said, "Yeah, nobody sings that one line because it's buried in there, but I can hear it very distinctly." He says, "Yeah, that was just me fooling around,"
huh?
You know, on the bridge. I says, "Yeah."
I think a lot of that is done by the engineer. Uh-huh. when they're recording,
uh-huh.
Because you can bring one part out, you can bring another part out, and I know, you know, J. Dutt Studios here in Pittsburgh,
right.
that we work with, he's gotten several awards. He's worked with Carole King, and,
right.
And I mean, it's just amazing that the ear that the engineer has, that, you know, well, let's try this, let's try that, and it works. Well, you know, I'm sure that, you know, a lot of the stuff you're talking about as far as harmony and so forth,
right.
You can go over that with Jimmy,
right.
And you know, he can probably expand on a lot of the things that I've said.
Right.
You know, Jimmy is the one with the ear between him and Donna. Dear Donna, God, what a voice on that young lady.
Right.
She's got a personality to match it. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, and her husband, Mark.
He's been with this group for over 33 years.
Wow, amazing.
And, you know, and he just hung in there, and he's just a great guy.
Well, you know, I'll tell you this. It had to be a thrill for you to join Jimmy and the rest of the group, because I will tell you, if you don't know this, and I don't even think that Jimmy understands how much this group is loved by the people that love the genre of this music. And I'm not going to call it doo-wop, you know, or anything else. It's really pop music, and it's really, you know, the love songs that the Skyliners did, they're over and above what I would call doo-wop. Although they're part of the genre, they're standards at this point. And
what, Mike, I said to Jimmy one day, I said, "Jimmy, I just don't consider the Skyliners as doo-wop." And he agreed with me. You know,
oh, yeah.
I've said all along that the Skyliners were put into that era. They were part of a portion of time when doo-wop was popular and so forth in the 59 and early 60s.
Right.
And they just happened to land in that time frame.
You know, I mean, look, you and I both know that This I Swear Is True and Since I Don't Have You, they're probably two of the greatest love songs ever written. And, you know, they're probably two of the prettiest songs ever written. They just, how do you construct anything better than that? Even with what they did with the violins, where they're plucking the violins during the bridge and playing them with a long bow at the end, and then having the violin strokes go against, at that time, Janet Vogel's trills.
Yeah.
To me, it's really amazing what they did then.
Well, you know, just to expand on that, and speaking of doo-wop, you know, a couple of years ago, I felt, you know, I'm thinking, how much longer can the promoters, you know, do what they're doing as far as doo-wop is concerned? And,
right.
You know, for the Skyliners to continue on, maybe we need to start looking at another avenue.
Uh-huh.
Basically, we were going to have a meeting one morning, and I was up all night writing up a spiel that I was going to present to Jimmy and Donna and Rick, and indicate to them that, you know, how long can we go this doo-wop route? Maybe we should take this another avenue so
right.
that we don't get stuck in a dead end.
Right.
So we started. We talked about having charts made, because the Skyliner music so much lends itself to full orchestration. We actually had charts made for symphonies, pops orchestras, and philharmonics.
Gotcha.
But we have started now working with symphonies and pops orchestras and philharmonics.
That's fantastic. It beats the hell out of tracks.
Yeah, exactly.
But you want to know something? Tracks work too when you need
them.
Sure. And you know.
If we had, because of the strings, because of the keyboards and so forth, if we had to go out and incorporate strings and violins, and since I don't have, we would never work.
Listen.
The price would be so astronomical.
Listen.
No one could afford to pay us to do it.
I did a bunch of shows with you guys. I'm sure you remember the one at the Broward that we did, you know. As a matter of fact,
sure.
I think you have one of those pictures on...
I have several of those pictures
yeah.
of you and Donna backstage without her makeup, et cetera, et cetera.
Really? Do you?
Oh, yes.
No kidding. Yeah. I haven't seen those. I probably will never get to them.
I think Donna would kill me if I left.
The one nice picture, there's one nice picture that was the shot at the Broward, and it's Johnny, Kenny, Vance. I don't know how I found myself right in the middle of the stage. I had shaved my mustache off about a week before. And, you know, when I saw that picture, I put it right back on because I had it since I'm 17. But there I am standing right in the middle. And what's funny about that picture, you're in the picture. The Crests are in the picture, you know, if you remember that night. And I'm looking for Jimmy, and Jimmy was standing behind somebody. He wasn't out front unless I missed him in the picture. And the other thing I remember that night is, you know, I remember after the show, Lenny Cintron not having a backstage pass. And Lenny says, I got to get in and talk to Jimmy. And I let him back. I let him backstage, and he and Jimmy, like, took off, like, you know, and we're talking in the parking lot or something, and we're having this tete-a-tete. And then Debbie Nader came to me and said, why did you let him in? He didn't have a backstage pass. There was another show that we did. I think it was a Harvey Robbins show up in either Boston or Rhode Island or something.
Uh-huh.
This applies to what we were talking about before. It was during a sound check, and I'm scratching my head and I'm saying, gee whiz, the Skyliners are working with a different band every weekend. If they don't bring their own guys, they send their charts, they have their musical arranger. However, if the guy, I mean, you know, I know it myself because we used to do Since I Don't Have You and This I Swear Is True at different times when we weren't singing with you guys, and you'd give it to the keyboard, give the chart to the keyboard player or the guitar player or whatever, and he'd look at it, and he'd always make a mess out of that intro. And if you don't nail the intro, you can't come in with the harmony. You know what I'm saying? It sounds,
yes.
You know what I mean? It's like out of sync. And
mm-hmm.
very few bands could nail the intros to either one of those tunes because the harmony comes like right in on the beginning of the next measure. And
yes.
if they don't give you the foundation to get there, it doesn't happen.
Yeah. You got to have the cue. Yes.
Exactly. So, you know, it's almost, and it would be sacrilegious to just have them play a couple of turnaround chords and go into the tune because you need those intros. Those intros had a life of their own.
That's the song. Yeah, absolutely. We've got friends in Cincinnati that have that on their cell phone,
right,
as their ringtone.
Oh, absolutely. You see, that's why. See, from my way of thinking, it would be fair to just put the intro. If I had the group, I'd have the orchestra play with the track, because you know the tracks were so unique that unless you get inside of it, you can't reproduce it.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty much what we do, Mike.
Yeah, no, I was there.
Sure.
I know.
Sure. You've got to have it. I mean, anything that we have on stage, it actually is a supplement to the tracks.
No, I know because I noticed that myself, and rightfully so, because if people come to hear Skyliners, you want to give them Skyliners, you know? You don't want to give them, okay, you know, it's like...
Sure.
You want to give them what they grew up on and give it to them like you're giving them gold.
It's not just the music, but it's also the vocals.
Right.
You know, and they complement each other.
No, I understand.
Yep.
How's Jimmy feeling lately?
He's doing absolutely phenomenal. He's, you know, he's like back to the old Jimmy. And I'm just, you know, between Donna and Rick and myself, we're just so proud to continue working with him.
And not only that, nobody wears jackets like Jimmy does either. I mean, people that haven't seen Jimmy and just have the records in their record collection or whatever, Jimmy really sparkles on stage. You know, he lights up.
Do our best. Yeah. We try not to hold back. You know, the Skyliners were always considered a class act, and if you don't have the garb to match it, you're not doing yourselves justice.
Right. Well, I'm talking to Nick Bocek, and we're talking about the Skyliners. We're talking about some of the backstage stuff, some of the ins and outs. And I was lucky enough to have spoken to Gavin Rapp tonight, and we're gonna talk to Donna Groom. And the Skyliners have been on my short list of idols as far as this music is concerned, and I've always looked up to them. Nick, you guys should just keep singing until you absolutely can't do it anymore, because the...
Well, you know, one of my favorite lines is, we're going to do this until we get it right, and
yeah,
hopefully we'll never get it right.
No, I hear you. Well, they're still turning out. I mean, you know, when you guys are up there, that the love that the people in the audience exude, and even afterwards, there's a meet and greet or whatever, and people come over,
yep,
and they want to lick your face because it's the Skyliners. There are the doo-wop royalty, if I will.
I can't tell you how many times being on stage with you know, the other Skyliners,
right?
And when Jimmy hits that high note,
right?
It's you know, and the audience just goes, you know, they start clapping and standing up as a... It becomes very emotional to me, myself, personally.
No, I hear you.
Just, it really does. And it's, you know, to get that kind of response and being part of it, it's,
oh, yeah,
emotional for me.
And you know what's really funny is that Jimmy's not thinking that at all. He's thinking, oh, my God, every night is different. What's coming out tonight? It's a pleasure, Nick.
That's great. That's great. Listen, I've got Donna here with me and Gavin Rapp, who is Janet Vogel's son.
Well, I'd like to talk to both of them. Donna Groom from the Skyliners. Hi, Donna.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine. We've sung on stage a few times, and I've had the pleasure of hearing you hit some wonderful high notes. You know, I have to say that you stepped into some big shoes, and you filled them very, very beautifully.
They're worn down by now. It's been 30 years.
Right. I know what you mean. And I always thought to myself, because I've seen you with sound checks and you know, been on stage with you, what you have to do singing with the Skyliners, it's not an ordinary task, because the pressure is on, and the people that come to hear those specific tunes expect to hear things the way they remember it when they were 16 years old. And
right.
You know, to have part of your career, part of your wonderful career, singing two or three licks at the end of two Skyliner hits, and have to sing them perfectly is a lot of pressure.
Yeah, it is.
I know. You were telling me about your laryngitis, and I know I spoke I spoke to you the other day, and you were in the throes of it. And that's one of the things, you know, that we always battle against when we're vocalists and, you know, you have to do the show. I've sung with broken legs. I've sung with, you know, 104 fever and pneumonia because the show is the show.
That's right.
You know.
Right. You just do the best you can, and but people are forgiving. You know, nobody's, everybody's, they understand. You know, you just, you do the best you
can. Oh, yeah.
In fact, sometimes it even works out better that if you end up pulling it off,
right,
you're better for it. It's like, wow, and you were sick.
You know, well, did you ever have a night where you thought the group was kind of shaky and everybody was tired and you were coming off two or three shows, and that's the night that people come up to you afterwards and they say, you guys never sounded better.
I know.
And then you have one night that you nail it and everything's perfect and people say, yeah, you know. It's always that way, you know.
It's true.
Because everybody's an expert anyway.
Oh, well, that's true. You know, unfortunately, music is I don't want to say you can't go on stats, but you're never measured on your real ability.
Oh, I know.
It's up to public opinion, and everybody, like you say, everybody's an expert.
I know.
And
Donna Groom does not just sing with the Skyliners. You're very, very rounded musically, and I happen to know that you started singing at 18 months, and I thought to myself, why didn't she start a group? That would have been cute.
Oh, God, that's hilarious. Now, you know what? Somebody else might do something like that. Of course, you could have the attention span of an 18-month-old, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know how far you could get, but... But I had music lessons from early on, but my mother, my mother is trained. She has a music degree from Duquesne University.
And wow.
A teacher. And she still teaches. She gives piano lessons. She's 75 years old. And
wow.
Still, yeah. And she, also had vocal lessons and gave, she teaches the cantors at the local Catholic church. And
wow.
She's the wedding organist. And I mean, she can still sing a mean Ave Maria.
Wow. Well, that's great stuff. Tell me more about your musical career, because I know you do a lot of other things other than singing with Jimmy.
Yeah, I do. And that's always been just, you know, a matter of survival. But I was in my first band. I was probably 17, maybe. And I filled in. I was just singing, standing out front like a singer. And but meanwhile, up until that time, I had studied piano. And I had gone to Duquesne University the first time as a piano major and organ minor.
Right.
And I just was not happy there. And just, you know, it's one of those things. I left home and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And I just wasn't happy. So my mother said, well, you know, you're just not going to do anything.
Right.
And she made me do something. So I went to Robert Morris, and at the time it was a business college. And they, you know, you took the usual stuff, the English, and you still have to do history and math and all that stuff. So I kind of took those things.
Right.
And while I was in school, there was an article in the Pittsburgh, I don't know if it was the Press or the Post-Gazette, that said the Skyliners were going to be getting two new members and they were going to audition people. And so my mother said, you know, that might be a nice job for you. And I knew who they were. I knew the song.
Right.
Even though, you know, I really wasn't born until a couple of years after.
No, I hear you.
But, you know, if you're a musician, a bona fide musician, you know all styles. You know, we knew everything from Four Freshmen, Ray Anthony in our house to old, you know, and stuff beyond that, because we were real musicians. So I thought, well, yeah. And plus, Where Have They Gone had come out in 75, I think.
Right.
And I thought, and you know, that was before the stations were all separate.
Correct.
You know, you could get a good variety of all kinds of stuff. So the Skyliners would be played back to back with the Eagles.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, right, exactly.
They would, like Take It Easy or whatever it was.
Their segues were like all over the place, and they were, you know, I hear you. You know, it's interesting. But you see, the Skyliners had something that a lot of groups didn't have, and they had two tunes that are now considered standard love songs. I mean, you know, It Happened Today, you know, and the, and is, you know, that, It Happened Today is a tune that you know, it's kind of obscure and not too many people know it, but those who know it love it. It's really three tunes, because if you add Lonely Way, you know, which Harmony Street did a great cover of that, believe it or not. I'll even send it to you. But what's funny is that not too many groups did love songs that just go on and on. Those since and This I Swear, those two songs will live forever. They'll be in the time capsule.
Yeah, they're classics, and I mean I knew that, and I thought, well, you know, this, it might be nice for me. So I auditioned, and I got in. I think I auditioned January 14th of 81.
Wow, you remember.
I've actually got my 30th anniversary this year.
Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. And so I was 19.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and I had turned 20 that March. So, you know, then being in school and doing the Skyliners, we would travel.
Uh-huh.
So my grades were okay, but my attendance grades suffered. So, you know, when you average it all together, if you do A work and you have an F in attendance, you get a C in your transcript. And I thought, well, this is crazy, because that's not what I'm doing. And, you know, they wouldn't make any concessions. Well, you can do both. If it's not going to affect too much. I mean, I couldn't even make a deal with anybody.
Right.
So I thought, well, you know what? School is always going to be here. This institution has been here way longer than I've been alive. So I decided to just, you know, see where, you know, just toss everything up, see where it landed, and just stay with the group. And, you know, and then one thing led to another. And, I mean, there were times when I wanted out so bad that I didn't know what to do. You know, there were times when I've loved it, and, I mean, it's a love-hate thing.
Hey, of course. Well, you know, usually when you're exhausted, you know, I try to explain to people that if you're doing one show on a weekend and it's somewhere on the other side of the country, you leave Friday night, you get there, you go to sleep, you wake up on Saturday sometime before noon, you go to a sound check half the day, you eat dinner, you do the show, you schmooze with people afterwards, you don't get to bed till late, and you fly out Sunday. That's 3 days to do your 45 minutes to an hour.
Right. And like I've said, too, you know, I mean, this is crazy, but, I mean, nobody probably understands this.
Right.
I've gone 6 whole months singing one song.
Right. There you go.
That is incredibly boring.
You got it.
I die, because there's no, you know, what are you doing?
Right.
You're singing one song that isn't even mine anyhow.
Hey, listen, imagine if you're...
You just got to do it, because you're doing concerts, and in that concert I get my one tune, and it's like, and it's got to be a Skyliner tune. And so you go for like months doing one song.
And you don't get a chance. In other words, it's probably not the tune that you would have picked if you probably sing a different one each time.
Yeah, or at least change it up every time we come back to a place. But, you know, that's what the promoters want.
They want
the song list, and that's what they want to hear. So
I know.
You know, it sometimes it had been extremely stifling, and other times it's like, well, you know, you're getting to see all these nice cities. On the other hand, like you say, you get in there, you do your sound check, you stick around the thing all day.
You watch the other groups, you know.
To the show, you're exhausted, you go back to bed.
You eat the buffet.
You see nothing.
Right.
Then it's back home to clean the house.
Right. No,
I don't care to do. So
another thing people don't understand, they say, oh, it's so exciting, and it's very exciting. When you're on stage, nothing can replace that feeling. But then on the way home, it's kind of a letdown, because you go back to just, you know, going to the grocery store and throwing eggplant into the cart, you know, and it's like, you know, it's like,
And I'll be in the frozen food section, and I hear, since I don't have you come on over the, you know, the...
And you want to say, hey, look at me. And you know, people will go, what?
I don't know. In my case, I mean, I've been there so long. It's just like I just go through and I just roll my eyes like, oh, God, here we are again.
Right.
But I count my blessings on the other hand.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like a good marriage, I guess. You stick with it. It's deep. it's a good thing, and it has its ups and downs, and but well, overall, it's what you are. It's what you become.
Speaking of marriage, tell me about Mark.
Mark is an incredible drummer, and
he has a great name for marriage because his name is Groom, and so is yours. So.
I was a bride and groom all on the same day.
There you go. You were bride and, you know, something. I didn't think of it, but I'm sure you heard that all day long.
I did. It was funny. And all Mark's brothers were in the wedding, too. So when they were announcing us, it was like, Dale Groom, friend of the groom, brother of the groom, so-and-so groom. It was groom all day long. And so, but it was a fun day. It was like 1983, so we're going on 28 years ourselves.
I remember 83.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you meet Mark?
Well, through the group, because he was with the group like
right.
4 years before I was.
Right. Mark's been around a long time. Yeah.
He knew Jan. They were friends. And,
right.
They, you know, they liked each other, and she used to hang out with them. But Mark was there probably in, like, the late 70s. And then, of course, I came in the group. And I knew Mark. I had a boyfriend. He had a girlfriend already. And, you know, about a year went by, and he said, of course, I did chase him, and he didn't think that was a good idea, which he was probably right.
Right.
Because, you know, it causes trouble in groups sometimes.
Oh, absolutely.
But we never did.
And, well, that's cool.
Yeah. So before you know it, you know, we're married a year or two later, something like that. But, and, you know, we stayed with the group, and ever since, it's been the same.
So it's got to be Skyliners all day long. You know, it's like, you know, and Mark is a very talented musician.
Yes, he
you know,
is.
Because I remember how talented he is.
Mm-hmm. Extremely visual.
And he calls a lot of shots back then.
Yeah. And so, yeah, but we have our two-piece group, too.
Uh-huh.
And we were doing that.
Right.
Like, right even before we were married, we put a duo together.
Hi, I'm Donna Groom and my husband, Mark. We're going to play for you right now. We'd like to thank you so much for having us. We're going to do Unforgettable. Unforgettable, that's what you are. Unforgettable, not near or far. Like a son of love that clings to me, to have a thought of you. Does things to me never before. Someone more unforgettable in every way. And forevermore, that's how you'll stay. That's why, darling, it's incredible that someone so unforgettable thinks that I am unforgettable too. More. trouble thinks that I am unforgettable too.
And then when it came time to buying house, I mean, we just worked like crazy and got our little house, our little bungalow, and we've been working two-piece ever since. In fact, anybody can go to YouTube, and if they type in Donna Groom, they'll see all kinds of stuff of the duo. And
very cool.
Yeah, and stuff that I've done with other orchestras. And
Ghost Fingers. He's the man with the mightiest touch, the spider's touch, such a ghost finger beckons you to enter his web of sin.
Lenny Dell used to play piano all by himself at the Garden City Hotel for years and years and years, you know, from the Dimensions. And he would sing, you know, tunes, and he would sing Over the Rainbow. And people would come over to him, and they would say, "You sound just like the guy that did that on the record." And he would look up at them, and he would say, "Thank you." And that would be it. He wouldn't say, "Hey, I'm Lenny Del Giudice from the Dimensions." He would just say, "Thank you." And it was like so silly. One day, I just happened to be there, and I actually ran up there, grabbed his mic, and said, "Ladies and gentlemen, this is Lenny Del from the Dimensions. You know, you got to understand who you're listening to." And everybody went, "Yay!" And he looked at me and went, "Why'd you do that?"
Oh, God.
No, it's funny.
It is.
Now, you've done some recording on your own.
Uh-huh.
And why don't you tell me about that?
Okay, not a whole lot. A few times, I've been on several CDs. I had one of my own that was, in Japan on Zero Records, X-E-R-O. But wow. I mean, you can't get it anymore. It was funny. It's like we went through all this in New York and, The producer was David Matthews. Now, he's not the Dave Matthews.
Right.
You know,
the other Dave Matthews.
Right. But he was the director for Brown. I hear Mark telling me.
Yeah.
With Brown. For years, he was his music director.
Uh-huh.
And, I think he was, he did albums with Barry Manilow, and he did the Honey Drippers.
Right.
And some other, you know, known people. But anyhow, they called me to do the CD for the Japanese. And,
right.
Like, in the first 5 weeks, it sold, like, 10,000 copies.
Wow.
It was good. Then the company ran out of money, and we are so sorry, but we can't, you know. I was supposed to do a tour of Japan.
Wow.
To everything. I don't know what happened to them. But
what happens to a lot of record companies? And all of a sudden, they decide in the middle, or whatever. I mean, I've had that happen so many times. Had a record break, and all of a sudden the record company just like goes, "Meh."
Yeah.
You know.
So, yeah. So then I was on as a compilation for some other people.
Uh-huh.
For the Japanese as well. And then
what were some of the tunes that you recorded for Zero?
Oh, God. They were all original tunes.
Really?
Yeah. They were. In fact, I mean, I have a copy of this. I don't even know if anybody can.
So they're collector's items.
It was called Night Mix for Lovers, I think.
Okay.
In fact, I'm looking at it. Night Mix for Lovers. I don't know that anybody can get it. I have a copy here, and that's about it.
I'll bet I know guys that have it. I swear. I know collectors. They come up with stuff that the artists don't even have in their collection anymore. And they say, "Yeah, I got it." You know, I have a few friends that I call once in a while. I say, "Do you have?" And they will send me the MP3 like almost by the time I hit send, and it's already on its way back to me. It's amazing.
Hmm.
You just never know. People have this stuff. Don't ask me why or how. You know.
They're into it. They find it.
You know.
And then I'm on some compilations, and then I did a Donna Groom Sings Standards that wasn't supposed to come out, but it came out somehow.
Uh-huh.
And when she passes, each one she passes goes. Ah. When she walks, she's like a summer that swings so cool and sways so gentle. And when she passes, each one she passes goes. Ah. Oh, but I watch her so sadly. Love her. Yes, I would give my heart gladly. But each day when she walks to the sea, she looks straight ahead, not at me. Tall and tan and young and lovely, the girl from Ipanema goes walking in. When she passes, I smile, but she doesn't see.
Somebody emailed me and said, I found Donna Groom Sings Standards. I went, oh, really? I thought the project was scrapped. And here, then there's excerpts on here with... Cheryl Bentine from Manhattan Transfer.
They wow.
Yeah, that's King Records.
Good company.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So, I mean, you know, they didn't ask me, but I guess, you know, what are you going to do?
Oh, listen, you know, I have stuff that I see that I've done and written and whatever, and I see it on compilations and everything. You know, we won't talk about which record companies do it, but, you know, I see stuff on compilations all the time. I say, hey, Mike, did you know that so-and-so tune is you know, it's on this, whatever. And my feeling is, hey, great. Jimmy has heard Harmony Street do the Skyliner stuff. He says to me, that's the greatest compliment in the world, man.
Yeah.
You know,
sure.
It's like, who could get mad at that? If somebody wants to take out the time to learn one of my tunes and perform it.
That's wonderful.
What could be bad, you know?
Yeah.
But you see, not every group can do Skyliners.
That's true.
It separates the men from the boys and the girls from the ladies, you know. I mean, it really does. Let's talk more about Mark. So,
okay.
So you know, here you are. Here you are. It's usually when you have someone that's in the music business, they go and do their thing, and the other person tries to understand what they're getting out of this high that they get from being on stage. But here you are doing it together, which is a little unique.
Well, that's the only way it would work.
You
I
know.
Mean, you never, and that'd be my advice to anybody, unless you had some kind of thing where you absolutely understood the other. It's so a different lifestyle that any regular man would never put up with it, or woman.
Right.
I mean, they do, but it can cause a lot of trouble.
Well, you know, it didn't work for Sonny and Cher. But it worked for the captain and Tennille. You know, it's like, what can I say? Why don't we talk to Mark a little bit?
Hello.
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Okay. All real good, real good.
Yeah, well, I was telling Donna, you know, I've worked on stage with you guys a bunch of times. You know, the group is tight as ever. And, you know, when you're doing the type of material that is Skyliners, there's no kidding around. Everybody has to show up because they're tough arrangements. And, you know, they have to be sung and they have to be played.
Yeah.
I mean.
They joke about Donna has this big rubber hammer. Somebody hits a bat at rehearsal.
Yeah, well.
Wrong, bonk.
Yeah. The Skyliner stuff is very much orchestrated. And, You know, I was saying to Donna that you come to a show and every band is different. They get the charts a month before or whatever. They claim to have looked at them, but they don't open up the envelope until the sound check, which you know very well. And then there it is. There are so many tunes that have such specific introductions in them, like Since and This I Swear. Mm-hmm. And unless the foundation is there to come in on the first harmony, you know, you're jumping off a cliff unless it's solid. And
My two brothers were with Skylines for, I don't know, 20-some years.
Uh-huh.
My little brother was bass, and my older brother was guitar.
Right.
And they both died, like, in maybe the last 10 years.
Oh, no. I mean, I've lost my entire immediate family as well, so I know what that's all about.
Yeah, there was, like, five or something in
wow.
the space of 10 years.
Wow.
But Terry and Dale and me would be there. And we're used to playing everything, you know, things over and over. And then now
right.
we hire guitar and bass.
Right.
And horns and all that as well.
Right.
But we were lucky to have the charts written by the guy who took Terry's place, Dick Engel.
Gotcha.
But, and every time we go to a rehearsal or anything, the guy come up, somebody will say, oh, these charts are real clear and real good. Because I guess
right.
some charts are notorious for just scratching, you know, scratching the chord out and putting something else in. And,
well, you can't play through those introductions. You can't just play through them. You got to play them exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Because
and they're spelled out real well on charts and all that. So we're
yeah.
lucky that way. And we usually get real good musicians as well to come in and
yeah.
play. So there's not, you know, not normally a big problem. With
right.
it. I mean, there's been some train wrecks.
Right. Yeah, I know.
You know, you get somebody that's not reading well. In fact, it's funny because some musicians are great players, but they don't read.
Oh, yeah, I know.
You know.
Even some studio guys. I mean, you know, they hear it, they feel it, they don't read it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the trouble with, like you said, our charts have to be real specific, and they have to, you know exactly what, you know, what is where. But we usually have pretty good luck doing that, so.
Well, it's funny, you know, you talk about drummers. Do you know who Stevie Jordan is?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I was a dean in a very tough New York City school for 30 years, as well as, you know, my singing career. And I get this kid, I used to take his sticks away in the lunchroom because he carried his sticks with him night and day, would play on the tiles in the hallways, play at lunchtime, play in class, play. And I used to take his sticks away, and his mother, Gloria Jordan, used to come in and say to me, Mr. Miller, you're going to ruin my son's career. He's going to be a famous drummer someday. And this was like junior high school. And then, sure enough, one day, I turn on the Letterman show, and he's sitting right there.
He's done a lot of stuff, a lot of great recordings.
Oh, yeah.
And he's, yeah, I always liked the way he did it. And he always uses a four-piece set, which is sort of not unheard of, but it's
right.
rare anymore. Usually everybody has all the toms everywhere and all that, you know.
Yep.
Just lays it down on that regular 40-style drum set.
I always, you know, I always respected drummers in every group that I had, you know, and I probably had a bazillion of them, you know, every one of the drummers that I ever knew and whatever, what they were all very special people. They thought, their thought processes were different. I mean, I could not, you know, I can sing and play guitar and, you know, whatever, whatever. But as far as getting behind a drum set, you have to be a special person to be able to do that.
Well, it's called nuts.
Yeah, I mean, and not only I know a lot of good drummers that can't count to four, and I know a lot of good drummers that don't know how to play behind a singing group. You know what I'm saying? And take it down, you know, during the verses and bring it back up during the bridges. And you know, it's like they have an on-off switch. That's it.
Yeah, well, in a way, that's the trouble with drums. There's no notes involved, so what you have is just being dynamics. You know, quiet when need be and loud when need be, and
right.
and you do your fills and all that. But you don't want to crowd anybody while you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be, the right judgment.
Well,
do
there is I would say there is a distinct difference between percussion and noise.
Yeah.
You know,
it's funny because cymbals are just pieces of metal and drums are hollow
yeah.
tubes, and
yeah.
You have to just deal with that instead of you know. So it's just one aspect of music, just the rhythm part of it.
Hey, listen,
you know?
Like I said, I had a junior high school kid teach me about paradiddles and flams. Mm. In my office one day, he says, Mr. Miller, you don't understand. It's about paradiddles and flams. And I said, okay.
Right, left, right, right, left, right, left, left.
Right, right. I mean, you know, I mean, but I guess, you know, it's like a language that you learn and you transfer it to your hands, and that's what it's like playing guitar, you know.
A lot of times it's like what not to play. Like, you know, you could feel this lick that you've been practicing all this time, but it's not going to fit to the song, so it's not going to work. So you don't do it.
Let me tell you.
You're better off just laying back and doing what's needed, you know.
And what's really funny is that when I had Harmony Street, we did the doo-wop shop, tons of times. And, you know, I would always bring my keyboard player, and a lot of groups went in a cappella and whatever. So Don turns around and he says, you've lugged that big keyboard in here and whatever. And, you know, it's like, okay. So Larry used to pre-program the music and play live with it. So that was it. He was all the bells and whistles. And Don said, aren't you putting a lot of other musicians out of work when you do that?
Oh, yeah.
And then I say to myself, now it's 20 plus years later and people are using tracks and people are using. And then I say to myself, drum machines were putting drummers out of work for a while too.
Oh yeah. For a long time. I remember when I was a kid, it was called a band box. They would just have rumba, you know, push
right.
a button and then cha-cha, push another button, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And now, I mean, they're so sophisticated and all that. I think that the main thing with live drums, they sound live, you know, all the...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, all the overtones and stuff, and then drums are maybe a little bit out of tune. It just makes it sound like it's happening live, you know.
Well, you know, and there are some big groups using tracks now, too. I know Pointer
yeah.
Sisters do. Mm-hmm. Terry Johnson uses tracks now and whatever. But then you have... You know, if you have solid tracks, you know, if you get a good band, they'll play with the tracks. I mean, I thought when we worked with you guys, I think in Boston or Rhode Island, I thought I heard the band playing with some tracks, you know, if my ears were telling me the right thing.
Well, any tracks that we would use, Donna has played.
Right.
She'll play keyboards in string lines.
Right. I hear you because I do a single show. And, you know, I just once in a while I'll get out and do it just to keep the creativity in my chops up. And I make all my tracks and all the vocals on the tracks are me. So I don't feel like as I'm trying to put something over, you know, it's all me anyway.
Did it anyway, right. You can't play everything at once.
Right, exactly.
You know,
well,
you put it down and then, so it's all you anyway, regardless.
I once spent time with the sound guy from Miami Sound Machine. And he said to me, I'll tell you something. They play two studio tracks, and that's what makes them, gives them all that excitement. He said, I can bring down these two faders, and all of a sudden, there's no Gloria Estefan, he said. And when you come from Southern Florida, you can't say Gloria Estefan. You have to say Gloria Estefan.
Oh, I see. Well,
or otherwise they look
I'll
at you
I'll keep that
funny.
In mind in Southern Florida anyway.
Yeah, there you go. So isn't it fun being the drummer for the Skyliners?
Oh, yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's we played a lot of great places, Radio City and I can't even think off the top of my head, but some, you know, some of the bigger theaters in the country. And it's always a lot of fun. And then we all get along and a lot of laughs. A lot of the laughs are at my expense, but
right.
it's fun, you know.
Right. And pretty much, I guess it's mostly Pittsburgh people. As a matter of fact, I spoke to some of the people on the movie set, you know, and I spoke to Gavin. And, you know, they even tried to use a lot of Pittsburgh-based people in and around the movie, which I think is great. It's almost an emotional thing, you know. Everybody's kind of grown out of the same nucleus.
Yeah, everybody's sort of. Well, I just play drums on part of their thing.
Oh, wow.
And I told Gavin, I don't know if you remember Back to the Future, the movie,
sure.
which I thought was a great movie, but he's playing the Chuck Berry part. You know, and this is supposed to take place in the 50s, and I'm looking at the TV, and I'm going, or the movie theater, and I'm saying, that's a 1980s drum set.
Oh, yeah.
And all that, you know, in the 50s, everything was real little and minuscule-like. So I told Gavin, I can get a hold of a 50s looking drum set.
Wow.
So he said, oh, we'll bring it down. So when they filled it with the drums, they're like authentic looking anyway. So he said that he had no idea. He said that it's, they want all the detail they can get.
But that's an interesting point. I mean, there are also guys that can tell you whether it's a pre-CBS Fender or an actual Leo Fender Jazzmaster. You know, I mean, there are guys that'll walk right up to you and tell you that. It's the same guys that are going to tell you, I want, since I don't have you, I want to sit back and hear it like I did when I was 13 years old.
Yeah.
You know.
But, you know, I'm not sure how many people would actually notice that, but he said, well, it's just like in the 50s, if a 1976 car goes down the road, he goes, you know, people will know it, you know, so he wants everything as authentic as possible.
Well, I'll tell you this, you know, they're in film school, there's one course that they give you where they, all the faux pas and all the big films where Judy Garland's pigtails were down to her waist, and then they were up to her shoulders, and then and the scarecrow was buttoned on different sides in certain films. But there is a famous Western that I don't remember, and they're just pulling into town, and if you look really closely on the side, there's a Buick parked there. And I don't remember what film it was, but it's clear as day, and it's still there, and it's part. It's like on recordings when there were mistakes, like you can hear a phone ringing in the background or whatever, and they leave it in there. You know,
jeez, that's something I've heard. That there was an airplane flying up, you know, a Western, and they see a jet airliner in the background going
past.
I guess the scene was so good, they said, oh, we'll keep it anyway.
Or low budget, you know, it's like, you know, hey, we're filming this with one camera, that's it, we're done. You know.
Cut. We're out of film, but that's the last one that we're going to do.
It's a wrap, you know.
It was interesting doing that, though, because I saw the process of making films. I never realized the attention to detail that they did.
Well, I've been in a couple of movies, and let me tell you, it's amazing, and it's also amazing having to shoot a scene over and over and over again, too.
Oh, yeah, there's a thing where a bottle spills. They had to fill the bottle again, the same part, you know, the same amount of liquid in the bottle,
right.
And they go over the scene over and over, and they finally say, okay, this is good, now we'll do it from another angle.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm thinking, my God, and they go back and they start up again.
Well, what's funny, too.
To get what they want.
Now they have digitalization, and now they have, you know, their editing is so more sophisticated, not just like it is in the recording business. I mean, I went to see Olivia Newton-John, six years ago at the Kravis Center here, and I went backstage, and I couldn't believe how on she was vocally. And she said to me, you know, hey, pitch correction. You know, we're all using it. I said, no kidding, because, you know, now the oldie groups and the R&B groups, and, you know, I kind of refrain from doo-wop. A lot of groups don't like to be called doo-wop groups, but the doo-wop groups, you know, don't get involved in that only because they want to be as pure as they can possibly be.
Right.
They're up there, you know.
And not so long ago, like some of the, I can't think real quick, but like even some of the Manhattan Transfer stuff and all that.
Right.
I mean, they were right spot on, and that's before pitch corrector was invented.
Yeah.
That's like my brother used to say, well, now it's the final frontier has been breached. Because you can sing flat or sharp, and you can correct it. So,
well,
and I guess they're doing that live now, too. So.
You know, Tim Hauser once came to hear Harmony Street, and he said to me, the ultimate compliment. He says, you guys are as tight as we are. We're just better produced. I said, get out of here. He says, you got to tell the girls what I used to tell Manhattan Transfer before we used to go out to every show. I would look them in the eyes. We would look into each other's eyes. And I would say, like a clam's ass and twice as tight. And then they would go out. And I said, oh, that's the secret. I said,
I never heard it put quite like that. But
that's what he used to. He says, that's what I say before every show. And I said, you do? And he goes, yeah. Because he started out as a doo-wop guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And he was just out at one of our shows. I can't remember where now.
He's a great guy.
New Jersey. Tim Hauser was there.
Yeah, he's a Jersey guy originally.
Oh, yeah. And he said he was home for something, and he came back, and he was backstage talking. And nice guy. And we opened a couple of years ago with, I think, five dates. We opened for them.
That's great.
It was a thrill.
Well, I know how much he respects the Skyliners. I mean, you know, he has to because that's his roots, you know.
Mm-hmm. And he knew Joe Rock real well, I guess, and he's just sitting around like one of the guys.
Oh, yeah, you know. Well, and most people don't understand that when you're backstage with Speedo and Little Anthony and Jay Siegel and even Johnny, I spoke to Johnny the day before he died, you know, is that how sweet and wonderful these people are and just glad to be there and glad that people are coming to hear the music. And, you know, I mean, that's the way it really is. You know, backstage, it's pretty much all for one and one for all. Everybody supports each other, and it's very rare that somebody is looking at somebody sideways, you know?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah, it's all like and over the years of the groups that we've played with, we get to know everybody.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of times there's, it's almost like a reunion or something, almost like a thing, you know?
I hear you. That's why I have so much. That's why I started doing the radio shows, because I said, you know what? I can talk to the same guys that I was on stage with all these years, and I can bring out things that nobody would really know, little stories and little innuendos that, you know, you would only know if you were backstage and hearing it behind the scenes, you know, which is a lot of fun, you know.
Yeah.
And it kind of keeps me creative, you know, which is a good thing. Thank you, Mark, and thank you, Donna, for being part of the Harmony Street Show, and many, many more years of success and wonderful shows with the Skyliners. You're such a great addition to the group, and they're lucky to have you.
Thank you very much, and thanks for having me as a guest. I appreciate it.
Well, you're very welcome.
It's nice talking to you.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay, you take care.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
You, thanks.
Mike, what's up?
How you doing, Gavin? Gavin, I spent many years singing with the Skyliners. I had a group called Harmony Street, and we did many, many shows together. And then I sang with George Galfo's Mystics, and that was in the later years. And at that time, I was singing with Donna and Nick. So
cool.
I'm very, very familiar, you know, with the entire story, and I know Jimmy for years, and I've covered all his tunes, believe it or not.
Oh, that's great.
And, you know, what's interesting to me now, I did a little research, and that kid that's playing you as a child, were you that good-looking when you were a kid?
Everyone asked me that. That's why I held the camera up in front of my face quite a bit.
Yeah, and I noticed also that a lot of the actors that you're using are Pittsburgh people.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
And, you know, this is very interesting because I guess you're using Pittsburgh as the nucleus. And because it's such an emotional thing, I think having Pittsburgh people kind of rings true.
Yeah. You know, we auditioned people that weren't from Pittsburgh, and they just didn't get it.
Right. I understand what you're saying. A lot of people are going to listen to this audience. I just want to say, because I'm going to be doing it in bits and pieces and editing it, I'm going to try to catch Jimmy in the car on Thursday, you know. And I guess what I'm trying to evoke from you is, number one, what made you decide to do this project, in your own words?
Well, it's really a pretty easy statement. When I turned the age that my mother passed away, I realized that, you know, that I was as old as she was, and had at that point a different perspective on life.
Right.
And thought, well, you know, I want to think about where I'm going and what I've been through, and that was the genesis of the me writing the memoir.
Well, I just want to tell the people that are listening that I'm talking to Gavin Rapp, and Gavin is the son of Janet Vogel Rapp, who, as anyone in the genre knows, was the high soprano voice for the Skyliners for all those years and actually made female falsetto vocal trill at the end of a tune, you know, set the trend for that. And your mom was so well respected in the business, you know, and was a terrific lady.
Thanks, Mike.
So, you know, I just want to say that. But so you've decided that you're going to pay homage to her and tell the story. Take me through this. You started a production company. You're part of a production company. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And this is Winter Morning?
Yes, Winter Morning Pictures.
Uh-huh. Now, how did you come up with that name?
Well, I was in a band for a number of years, and one of our ballads was called Winter Mornings.
Uh-huh.
And so it just ended up being Winter Morning Pictures.
Right.
I wanted to continue with that name, and I didn't want to brand it as, like, you know, Steel City Entertainment or, you know, Iron City Filmworks or anything like that. So I wanted to go a little bit obscure, and so we decided on Winter Morning Pictures.
Right. And actually, we're talking actually live from the set of the movie Since I Don't Have You. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so that should be pretty exciting.
10 hours.
I know how it is. Sometimes just to get one scene right, you can spend all day, and, you know, you have to tweak it, and it just has to be the right thing because it lives forever after you print it.
Right, you know that. That's right.
You know. Now, tell me, Jim and Mike Hamilton, how do they fit in?
There are partners in Winter Morning Pictures,
right?
And Mike is our one of our producers.
Right. Now, you've done other things other than taking on this project. You've done some things before this.
We did. We had a crime feature called Trapped, starring Corbin Burnson and Tom Atkins.
Gotcha. Well, we know Tom is from Pittsburgh as well, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Big Pittsburgh guy, and, you know, we had him involved in Trapped. And he's been involved peripherally in this project as well with, you know, helping us get the word out and promoting it and helping us with interviews and getting our chronology right and putting the story together.
Got you. Well, so how far are you along in the production of the movie?
We're about 40% in right now. We have about two months and 2 weeks to shoot.
Gotcha. Well, you know, there are movies about the genre, and some of them have a real nice theme to them. Some of them are fictional. Some of them fall by the wayside. Some of them make it big. And, you know, this one actually is a story that not too many people know the details about. They know vaguely, you know, what happened. Anybody who follows the music, of course, know how many hits the Skyliners had, but I don't think they really know the inside story of what happened with your mom.
Right, and what we're hoping with this story is that, you know, from a marketing perspective, people will be able to be attracted to it because it's really behind the scenes or behind the story on steroids. And
right.
From a child's perspective,
right.
Growing up in that environment and being able to try to understand and sort those complex issues out as a child matures, and then how to deal with those decisions that parents have made that you're part of the aftermath in.
No, I understand, because the Skyliners were on the road for quite a while and played every major venue and did the Dick Clark Show and whatever. And I guess you remember your mom on stage when you were younger, and you know, you probably thought that's what every mom did.
it was a normal slice of life,
right?
Although it was very very different from my friends,
right? But there was, you know, just to get right down to the nitty gritty, because, you know, I've experienced that in my family, and of course, you know. None of us have perfect families, you know, no matter how they look from the outside and from the street, always behind the door and the smiles are real life situations. And I'm thinking the word depression comes to mind emotion and all of that stuff. Is that the message that hits home as you wend your way into the movie?
It does, and it's really a different look at that type of symptom,
right,
or an ailment that people had that we didn't know much about back then,
right.
And it wasn't like you could pop
now a Zoloft or a Buterin or whatever the drug is now that people can get pretty easily through a simple diagnosis.
Right.
You know, in the mid 70s, that was really an unknown area, and you know, so that does touch on the, you know, we look into that subject a little greater and how to, you know, really try. Hopefully, people understand the sensitivity of it and be able to understand how difficult depression can be to go through if you have it.
I understand, but you know, myself having a psychology background, and is in addition to my musical background, I was a dean in a very tough New York City school with a psychology background. And, you know, they divide depression into so many different categories, and they give it so many different names. You're either bipolar, or you're borderline, or you're schizophrenic, or you're, and I think a lot of times doctors just guess, and they dole out drugs, you know, and they hope they hit a home run with it, and they don't always do that.
Right.
You know, let's talk about the movie a little bit more. Who are some of the people that you've cast in the movie?
What we did was we had an extensive casting process that we went through for about 6 months. We interviewed people from Pittsburgh, people from Philadelphia, people from New York, and people from L.A.
Gotcha.
And after going through about 10 to 15 people in each role, we decided that the people that we really wanted to give the opportunity to were the people that were from Pittsburgh who were budding actors or on the cusp of being in the business for quite a number of years and hadn't had a chance to have a breakout role.
Right.
And so that's what we presented it to them as, and have been able to work with some great actors locally that really feel that this is going to showcase their talent to an extreme where they're going to be noticed.
I think that's great. So who has the lead role? Who plays Jan?
Her name is Kristen Spadafora.
Okay. Has she done other things?
She was in, she did a lot of modeling.
Right.
And she did commercials, and she was in the movie Love and Other Drugs that was shot in Pittsburgh, I think, a couple years ago as an extra.
Gotcha.
And came to us through our casting, our casting director as a possible person that could be a good person for the role.
Does she sing, or is she going to lip sync in this movie?
Everyone's going to lip sync.
Okay, which, you know, let me tell you, I remember when Looking for an Echo came out, and I was on the radio with Kenny Vance, you know, some years ago, and he said to me, if Armand Asante learns how to lip sync, we're going to have a hit. If he doesn't, we're in trouble. You know.
Yeah,
but,
that's right.
But, of course, you know, it just depends on how dedicated the actors are, you know, as far as nailing it. What I'm going to ask you is, are the Skyliners themselves doing the vocals? Are you going to use the actual masters, you know, from the old days? How are you going to do that?
We have all the masters that we're going to use.
Gotcha.
And when we talked about it to a lot of people that were fans, you know, the decision was clear that they don't want people up there trying to sing songs that they just can't sing. So just like Looking for an Echo or movie that came out, Beyond the Sea, with Kevin Spacey.
Right.
I think it could have been a much better hit if Kevin didn't sing.
Yeah.
Just had Bobby Darin tracks and lip sync.
Well, you see, Kevin needed to do that. That was about his ego. So, you know, he needed to prove that he could cop it.
And that's okay.
Yeah, you know.
No, that's not what we're doing.
Right. No, I understand that. And Tom is playing what role in the movie?
You know, it comes and goes. Tom has been extremely busy lately.
Right.
And we had to bump him from a couple of different roles because he just hasn't been available.
Gotcha.
But we're going to try to get him in as an attorney that helps me build my case in the movie to... confront my dad in an appropriate manner.
Right. Well, you know, what's funny is that a lot of people don't understand, you know, when you make a movie, you have all this creativity around you and you have all these ideas and you pour it into a big funnel. And then at the end, it just all just plops right out, you know, and there it is. You know, if everybody's doing their job, it works out beautifully, you know, but
right.
There's an awful lot of stuff that goes into this funnel before it comes out. And I don't think people who are not around it really don't understand how much work goes into it. It's 24/7 situation until it's done.
You're absolutely right. And we've been filming, you know, off and on since last September. So we have season changes.
Right.
And, you know, going past. And it's good because we wanted to show a progression of time.
Right.
Which has been really great for the movie. But it's been, as you know, hard to shoot because we have to shoot over, you know, a period of about 10 months.
I understand that this is a labor of love, and I understand that even before you get to filming a movie like this, the thoughts and the ideas and the groundwork must have come to you over a long, long period of time. You didn't just wake up one morning and say, I think I'll do this. This must have taken a lot of soul searching.
It definitely has, and it has probably been about, well, you know, it's a lifelong journey, but you get to that point where you say, am I going to do this or not? And so that was about 10 years ago.
Well, I totally respect you for doing this. I wish you all the luck in the world, and I hope you have a great hit. And absolutely, I will go with my wife, Paulette, to see the movie. You know,
I appreciate it.
And you know, I can't wait to see the movie because, as I say, I've worked on stage with the people that this movie is about. And so it's very, very near and dear to me, too. When I first heard about it, I said, oh, boy, the Skyliners, they sang so many love songs and are in the hearts of so many baby boomers that the movie has to fly. You know,
yeah.
It has to fly.
Our tagline for the movie or our, you know, just a little log line is that the harmony was only in the music.
No, I understand. And I will tell you myself that as many people that have covered all of their tunes, I myself, with two different groups, have probably sung lead on just about all the big hits. Since I Don't Have You, This I Swear Is True, It Happened Today. Harmony Street had a wonderful cut of Lonely Way that was on so many compilations. And it's really done in tribute to the Skyliners because we respected them so much. The real truth is that any of the Skyliners tunes separates the men from the boys and,
right.
and the girls from the ladies because no one can reproduce what goes on at the end of those tunes.
Yeah.
Which leads us to Donna Groom. And Gavin, just let me say that it's been such a thrill and an honor to speak to you. And I wish you all the luck in the world with the movie, and we'll be speaking soon. This is Gavin Rapp, whose mom was Janet Vogel Rapp, the soprano for Jimmy Beaumont and the Skyliners. It's just been a thrill talking to you.
Thanks, Mike. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to meeting you. And
absolutely, Gavin. Thank you.
Oh, okay.
Rick, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing, Mike?
That's good. So tell me, it's got to be a thrill to be singing with the Skyliners because they had so many hits and so many great love songs and their arrangements were just so over the top. It's got to be a thrill.
It's good to be back. You know, I sang with the Skyliners from 1980 to 1994.
Wow.
And then I got out of the group then, and then I was replaced by another guy. And then I've moved to Las Vegas since.
Uh-huh.
And Nick called me. I guess that was back in September, wanting to know if I wanted to resume my career again with the Skyliners.
Wow.
And I didn't have anything planned, so I said, yeah, so I've been back with them now since September.
Yeah, well, you know.
It's like I'm a new old guy.
Yeah, no, I hear you. You know, that's the beauty of doing this. Well, And what's really funny is when you break in a new guy, it's like, it takes a long time until they start breathing and feeling and wearing it and living it. But, you know, I'm sure not much has changed since you did it originally, because since I don't have you is since I don't have you.
Right, right. They called me on a Tuesday, and I says, when I told them, yeah, I would do it, I says, well, when's the first drive, or when can we rehearse?
Uh-huh.
And they says, well, the first show's Saturday, and let's hope the suit fits you. And I walked right on the stage and did it, the suit fit.
Well, but you know what? You're a Pittsburgh guy, so you had it, you had Skyliners in your blood anyway, so, you know.
Sure, yeah. It was the same, basically the same stuff, and I remembered all my parts, so yeah, I just walked right on and did it. We just moved out here within the last year. It'll be a year in April. So
oh, okay, so you're
all new to us, so I'm still... We still go to shows and things. Not too much on the Strip. We get downtown and a few other places, but not too much on the Strip. The Strip is just too crazy.
Right. Oh, I know it is. Now, you've had some other musical ventures in your life, as well as having sung with the Skyliners.
Right, right. I was in a lounge show band in the 70s. We traveled the East Coast from Florida to New York and even over in some of the Midwest, like Ohio and things like that. And I was kind of the comedian. I mean, we did production numbers and show things, too, but I was kind of the comedian.
Right. No, I hear you.
Back in the 70s, you know, when you had to do the it's almost like a vaudeville type show. It was Las Vegas-type lounge show, you know.
Yeah, well, I've been there, done that, and you know, it's like... You know, you have to decide, you know, I went through all kinds. I was a dean in a very tough New York City school for 30 years, but I also had my music career. So my day started a lot of times at 10 o'clock at night when you get on the stage. You know what I mean? And the daytime, I was just going through the motions, you know.
Yeah.
And you know how that is. And then, because you've been through that, you know, you have music in your life and it's so near and dear to you, and then all of a sudden you leave and it just calls you back. And, you know, it's very hard to shake it off and quit cold turkey, you know.
Yeah, right, right. After I got out of the Skyliners in 94, I got a degree in engineering, went to school and got a degree in engineering, so I worked for an engineering firm. And then
gotcha.
It started going through my blood again, and I guess I put a show together and started going out and playing on my own for about 5 years. And it was really, you know, it was really doing good. And, you know, a little different when you're standing on the stage all by yourself as opposed to people with you, you know. But, I really enjoyed that, and then we decided to make the move here, and then I had to give that up. And I was thinking about, which I'm still thinking about once in a while, possibly working out here, you know, when the Skyliners aren't working.
Yeah.
But the Skyliners, you know, I do sing leads, but it's more or less ooh-ah, ooh-ah, ooh-ah.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, you want to get your rocks off, because I've been in that situation, too, where, you know, different things and whatever. And right now I'm not singing at all, which is painful, because I go to shows. I was at, you know, one of the Nader shows in Broward County at the Broward Center the other night with Paulette, and it was, you know, Jay Siegel and the Tokens, Kenny Vance, Lil Anthony, and the Legends. And, of course, you know, I'm always backstage, and it's hard to watch because you want to just, like, run down the aisle and jump up on the stage and sing first tenor.
That's exactly, yeah, I know. I missed it all those years, and that's why it's such a blast now to be back with Jimmy. You know, and being with Jimmy all the years that I was like going to school. I mean, you know, when you're learning from the master. And then
oh, you bet. You bet.
And all the other singers, and it's like school when you listen to these guys sing, you know, and you pick up little things they do, little traits and everything, you know.
Yeah, well, not only that. I mean, there's so much love about Jimmy. I mean, I told Jimmy, I says, man, I don't even think you have a concept of how much people love you because you brought them a couple of tunes with Since and with This I Swear and with Lonely Way and with Pennies and with, you know, go on and on and on, that are so much a part of them that you just don't know how many people love you that way.
You know? Exactly. And I don't think Jimmy realizes, you know, I mean, he's a reigning deity in the oldies and doo-wop.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, and, you know, Since I Don't Have You is not only a classic in rock and roll.
Right. It's a standard. It's an American standard. It'll be in the time capsule.
Right. Right. Exactly. It's a standard. Yeah. Yeah. It'll get down with songs like My Way or whatever. You know, it's a standard song. It's great being back. And, you know, I mean, I am enjoying and cherishing every minute of it, you know. You know, I don't know how long this is going to last, you know.
That's true.
I'm going to be cherishing every minute of it while it does.
We're losing baby boomers like crazy. I mean, every time I pick up the phone, it's like, did you hear about so-and-so? And did you hear about so-and-so? And it's like, oh, my God, you know. It's like, so, you know, every day, you know, you got to do what you love, so.
But the thing about doo-wop is, you know, it bridges all generation gaps.
You bet.
I mean, we are picking up, I see more and more younger people in the audience now than even what we saw before. So it's not only the older generation that remembers, there's a whole new younger generation coming up that wants to hear that kind of music.
No, I understand. I want to thank you very much, Rick, for joining us. I wish you and the Skyliners all the luck in the world, because the group is such a wonderful entity.
Well, I thank you, Mike. And I check out your web page and your Facebook and everything, and you're a class act.
Well, I've thrown my little pebble in the sand, you know. No matter what you do in this genre, it's great. And, you know, the best part of doing this, the most wonderful part, is standing on stage in the middle of a song. And I have always said, you know, they don't even have to pay me to do this. It's like when you're in the middle of a song and people are enjoying it, that's the payment. Everything else is gravy. And the second thing is all the really great people that I've met through this music. I mean, it's just, and you know yourself.
When we work with certain acts, I'm standing in the wings just like I'm part of the audience.
Oh, yeah, because we're still in awe of those people that we grew up with.
Oh,
and, you know,
right.
And, you know, it's just such great people and such talented people that it's a wonderful thing.
They're nice. All of them are nice people, and that's the thing about it, you know.
Yeah. Well, you guys are not only talented and sing a whole bunch of hits, but you guys are great people too, because I can remember being backstage with the group, and, you know, it's just, hey. And then at the same time, you're hanging out, and then I have to look at Jimmy, and I got to pinch myself, and I say to myself in that next moment, that's Jimmy Beaumont. Oh, my goodness.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
When we were in Apple Valley, this was back in the 80s, and we were doing a concert.
Uh-huh.
And we went on, and then the Righteous Brothers went on after us, and they congratulated us after we come on.
Right.
We went back to the hotel, and we're sitting at one end of the bar, and the Righteous Brothers, you know, Bill Medley and Bobby Hatton,
right,
sitting there together.
Right.
So anyway, but Jimmy is sitting there, and we're talking. He says, "Boy, I'd really like to meet him." And I says, "Well, Jimmy," I says, "all you got to do is just walk in." He says, "No." He says, "That's the Righteous Brothers. I don't want to bother them. I don't want to." Well, you know, down at the other end of the bar, the Righteous Brothers were having the same conversation down there. They wanted to meet Jimmy Beaumont.
Isn't that something? Well, you know, and I can see that, too, because
talked and everybody laughed,
you know. And I can see that, too, because I'll tell you, two great entities, but The Skyliners will go in the time capsule. That's it.
Yeah.
No holds barred. I mean, it's you know, when you make the short list of like the top two or three, the Skyliners are on that list.
Well, thank you very much.
You know,
that's
absolutely.
I appreciate that.
Well, Rick, it's been wonderful talking to you, and thank you very much. And
it's my pleasure. I really appreciate it.
I'll see you in Carl Springs.
Okay, Mike.
Thanks, Rick. Have a great night.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. Well, that was my interview with the Skyliners. Jimmy, Nick, Donna, Mark, with Gavin Rapp, Janet Vogel Rapp's son, talking about Since I Don't Have You, the movie. And Rick, it's Mike Miller saying so long from Harmony Street. Love you. See you soon.
Open up your heart. all I really